Uber officially filed for its initial public offering Thursday, giving investors a detailed look at its finances and bringing the ride-hailing service a step closer to one of the biggest tech stock listings of all time. $100 billion is the valuation Uber's aiming for. That would be roughly 9 times the revenue it brought in last year, but still less than the multiple at which Lyft went public. That debut's gotten off to a rocky start, with the stock now trading 15% below its offer price.
I actually think it is a Bitcoin resurgence. I think there's a really good chance that the December lows we saw in the 3,000s are probably the lows for this cycle. There's a couple things that are going on. You've seen improving fundamentals. You look at transaction levels. Those are back to 2017 levels. So there's a lot of network activity. And then as a proxy, look at the CME Bitcoin futures. Those are at all-time highs.
There was a solid rebound in U.S. hiring during the month of March, from what was nothing short of a bleak February. But that strength is masking weakness in a key sector, manufacturing. The factory industry lost 6,000 jobs last month, ending the longest streak of job gains in a quarter of a century.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's April the 12th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We made it through the week, and we've put together a really good Friday broadcast for you. Our regulars are all back with us this morning. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. We'll bring Paul into the conversation in just a few seconds. And Brian Summers is back after a couple of weeks off. We'll talk a little airline news, an update on the 737 MAX, and some new innovations for aircraft, perhaps some color-coded overhead bins to tell you when they're full or not. I'm just going to tease that out. 5:38 this morning with Brian Summers from skiff.com. But first, let's get going on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up now 161 points, nearly a half, more than a half a percent. The S&P and NASDAQ futures are up nearly a third this morning. As we look around the rest of the globe, markets in Europe are generally in the green as well. In London, Germany, and France, up nearly a third to a half a percent. And in Asia this morning, markets ending the day in Japan higher by 159 points, nearly three quarters of a percent. In the Hang Seng, up nearly a quarter of a percent. The Shanghai off just a fraction. Oil in the U.S. at $64.46 a barrel, which is up about 88 cents. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. You heard in the opening montage some of the big stories of the morning. Uber, of course, one of them gearing up for its highly anticipated IPO. The ride-hailing service set a target of $1 billion in its filing. The company will list on the New York Stock Exchange under the symbol Uber. The filing comes about 2 weeks after smaller rival Lyft went public. Uber reportedly looking to sell about $10 billion worth of stock, valuing the company at around $100 billion. Disney is setting the price for its subscription service at just under $7. Disney Plus will include access to Marvel movies, Star Wars, the entire Disney Animation Vault, National Geographic, and The Simpsons for $6.99 a month. Disney is late to enter the streaming business and may be trying to undercut competitors Netflix and Hulu. Let's begin front and center this morning with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul is an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview, one of our regular Friday guests. Paul, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you.
Happy Friday. As we were listening to the montage this morning, we were commenting about Uber and Lyft and their IPOs, these new stocks that will begin trading and that are trading in the case of Lyft and Uber will begin. When we size up one of these stocks, what are we looking for? I mean, do first-time investors or do investors get into first-time companies like this right off the bat?
Usually, no. Usually what happens is when they go to market, those companies like Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and so on that bring them public, are in charge of selling those shares. So they generally will sell them to their best customers, and a lot of times those are institutional investors. So the retail investor usually does not get a sniff of buying the stock at the IPO price. They usually buy it on the market once it opens up. And in the case of Lyft, it opened up at 20% premium to the IPO price and then started trading from there. And as you mentioned, it's been trading below its IPO price almost the second, third day after it started trading. So for those investors, normally we don't mess around in the IPO market. It doesn't make sense. They're not really proven from a financial perspective. It's best to sit back and wait a little while. If you were to buy Amazon, Cisco, Microsoft at the IPO price or wait 6 months or a year later, you still made an awful lot of money. So it makes sense to sit back and just kind of see how things go as they become a public company, because it tends to be a little bit different than when they were private.
Yeah, and so when we see all the hullabaloo today with Uber, the first trade is probably not going to be Paul Nolte from Chicago.
Oh, no. It may not be until 2020, if at all.
Yeah.
And in the case of Lyft, you know, one of the things that now you have the ability to take a look at their financials. And as we were talking about just before we got on air, Lyft is losing 45 cents for every dollar that they make in revenue. So I really kind of struggle with that as far as an investor goes. It may be the greatest thing in the world, but I'm trying to figure out how the investor makes money at a model like that.
Yeah, and the behavior, I know in interviewing some of the startup CEOs over the couple of years, the few years I've been doing this program, things change when you become a publicly traded company. It's the startup entrepreneurial setting changes from the company to when it is a publicly traded company. Things change.
Oh, absolutely. Now you have the SEC. You have a lot more regulation. There's things you can and can't do. And as Elon Musk is finding out from Tesla, you cannot handle yourself and run the company as you were prior. And a lot of times the entrepreneurs are the worst when that company gets to the big size. You know, they're great at the startup phase and getting it going, but running a big major company, they may not have that skill set for.
We look at the big board this morning. Futures are up all of a sudden 160 points. Any idea why we're seeing this bump this morning?
I haven't really... Excuse me. I have not really seen anything in the news other than Chevron buying Anadarko Petroleum, and it may be that the IPO, and not the IPO, but the buyout market is getting a little more exciting, where they're thinking that the companies may be buying others out as opposed to staying public as ongoing concerns. So if there is more buyout activity, that tends to get investors pretty excited about the markets.
Yeah, I like to check in at marketwatch.com to see daily what they put on their front picture on their website. Today it's a bear at the top of a tree. It looks like it's a scared bear. So read what you will into the photograph this morning.
And that will change daily. So yeah, it'll be a bull. Yesterday it was a bull. Today it'll be a bear. So whatever sells the eyeballs.
What did you see on the scene this week in economic data or in news from the world of business that was good or bad?
Yeah, there were a couple things that we were looking at. The inflation data was one. PPI, CPI numbers came in pretty much in line with expectations, maybe a little bit higher. As we talked about energy prices last week, that was a big key for producer prices, and that was a little bit above expectations. And so we're seeing inflationary pressures, but a lot of that coming from food and energy. And then the Fed didn't meet, they released their minutes from their last meeting. And that was not really a big surprise. But what we are seeing in the Fed is a little bit of a differences in opinion. So not everybody is all on the same page. So as we go through the next month or so leading up to their next meeting, when a lot of Fed officials will be on the stump talking about the economy, you're going to hear very different views on the economy. Should we raise rates? Should we not? And that may move markets around a little bit as they speak.
Yeah, and yesterday I think it was James Bullard who said that we might actually even be seeing a rate increase before the end of the year if inflation, if those inflation numbers go the wrong way.
Right, and that's why we take a look at the, I mean, the two things that really the Fed is focused on from their mandate is inflation data and the unemployment data. And we got the weekly jobless claims are down to their 50-year lows, so the job market is still pretty strong. The inflation data will move around a little bit, I think, more with energy prices. And as we talked about last week, the pump price is now up over 3. That'll impact the producer prices as well as consumer prices and what we're paying for food and energy.
Paul Nolte is here, a senior portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, I want to talk a little bit about some other stuff. I know we had sort of briefed each other yesterday on possible topics. You don't want to talk about Brexit, so we're going to skip past that.
It's an ongoing nightmare.
until Halloween. What else is the China deal the next big thing that we need to kind of get under our belts?
You know, that one is an ongoing issue as well. It's one of those things that gets tossed around every once in a while. When things kind of get quiet on Wall Street, you'll see a news item saying we're getting close to a deal and you know, we're still in negotiations and things are going well. I think that's a tough one to call. That could be lasting for a long time yet. So I don't know if we're necessarily any closer to a deal today than we were 2 months ago, let alone 6 months ago. When that gets announced, I would expect to see the market pop for a short period of time. And then everybody else is going to take a look at what that deal looks like and what those possible impacts are. But even once that's done, we're not going to see the impacts in the economy and in the financial markets for months until we start to see trade and how everybody handles things. We're now starting to see the impacts of lessened trade, some of the tariffs and everything else. We're now starting to see those impacts, even though they've been implemented 6 months to a year ago.
And earnings season, we're probably going to get a better, as quarterly earnings come out, starting today, really. A better sense of that, and the predictions for earnings season are not very positive.
No, they're not. When you take a look at the earnings, the expectation, it's part of the reason why I think the markets are rallying here in general coming out of the Christmas holiday, is the expectation was with the government shutdown, with the very cold winter, the first quarter was going to be the kind of what we call a kitchen sink quarter. Things are going to be bad. So if they're going to be bad, I'm going to throw everything I can in. We're going to take this expense. We're going to do this and really reduce earnings. When we take a look at the top line, when we take a look at the top line growth for a lot of the companies, they're probably growing at about a 3-4% annual rate. And again, with the first quarter earnings, they've come down a fair amount. And some of that pressure, I think, is also due to wages. We've seen wages pick up, so margins are coming under pressure for a lot of companies here. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how it develops. What we're going to be listening for is the CEO conversation. What are they talking about? What are they seeing in the economy? Not necessarily what happened last quarter, but kind of a forward look. Those are going to be the comments that we're really going to be keying on.
I wanted to briefly talk as we end here about taxes. I know tax day is on its way. From a portfolio standpoint, what's some advice? I know most people probably have their taxes in now, but
yeah.
Maybe preparing for next year and paperwork.
Yeah, you know, what we generally try to recommend for people is, you know, just have a folder by the mailbox. As tax information, things come in, just toss it into the folder. And take a look at it as you go through the course of the year, making sure that you're kind of acquiring all the stuff that you need to for taxes. One of the things, though, in the first quarter tends to be the time, or this period of the year tends to be the time that, you know, bonuses get paid, pay raises get made, etc. So it's really a good time to review your 401k. If you're not maxing out your 401k or increasing your savings with those bonuses, etc., it's a good time to take that review. If you've got a 3% raise or a 5% raise, maybe bump up your 401k contribution by a percentage point or two. And put some of that away for yourself as well as enjoy the fact that you have a little bit bigger paycheck. So it's a way to increase your savings and review that. And this is a good time of the year to do that as some of those pay increases come through.
I finished my taxes last week, and the advice I would have for people, if they haven't done it, go in and review. And you'll know this when you do your taxes, your W-4.
Yeah.
I immediately, after I finished my taxes, changed my W-4.
Yeah.
Because it impacted this year's taxes.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things, and it was interesting, I was talking to a friend of mine last night, and she made the comment that she's paying less in taxes this year. Now, her refund is smaller than it was last year because they adjusted your withholdings. So a lot of people are looking at it going, well, my refund isn't as big as it was last year. But you have to take a look at how much in taxes did you pay this year versus last. And, obviously you have to account for changes in income, but assuming the income rates are about the same, we're seeing that impact where people are paying less in taxes this year than last, but the refunds are a little bit less because of the adjustments in the withholdings over the course of a year.
Yeah, and that's sort of mental. The people, when they don't see that refund, they're like, uh-oh, what happened?
Right.
Even though it may not be a big impact.
Right. Yeah. And, so those are a couple things to take a look at when you're going through your taxes. And then make sure that you kind of purge some of the old stuff. You don't need to keep tax records much beyond 4 years. So, again, you can go back through your filing system and kind of take those old ones and shred them or dispose of them properly. So nobody gets that information, but you can do that with your taxes as well.
So you're saying I don't need my income tax return from when I was 19 years old?
I think you can probably ditch that along with utility bills and some of the gas bills as well. Those don't need to be in the file cabinet anymore.
Paul, how can people get a hold of you and have a conversation one-on-one?
They can drop me an email. It's probably best at pnolte@kingsviewam.com.
Have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
All right, we'll talk to you then.
I'm Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, where he's the Senior Vice President and Senior Portfolio Manager.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Lots of airline news to talk about this morning, from the 737 MAX to some changes for JetBlue, all of it in our conversation this morning with Brian Summers, who's Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com. And Brian joins us this morning via Skype from Los Angeles. Brian, let's start with the 737 MAX story. Let's give listeners an update on how the ongoing grounding is still impacting some of the airlines.
Yes, Steve, the airplane remains grounded. We're not sure when it will fly again. The hope is perhaps sometime this summer, I suppose, maybe late in June. Airlines seem to be canceling their flights a little bit at a time. So we saw in the last week or so, Americans said, we think this will take a little bit longer. They canceled their flights out till June 5th. Southwest came out and canceled its flights to June 7th. Those are the two airlines that are most affected by the groundings. American has 24 of the MAX jets. They've been canceling about 90 flights a day. Southwest has 34 jets. They've been canceling somewhere about 130 flights a day. They've been trying to let people know far in advance. There have been some complaints from passengers. I've seen this anecdotally where folks said that they really weren't notified. The airline should have done better. But, the airlines are doing the best they can. Our friends at Chicago-based United, I wouldn't say they're gloating, Steve, but they're doing a little bit better. They only have 14 MAX aircraft, and so far they've said that they've been able to go along with very limited cancellations. One of the things that they're doing is they're using bigger aircraft. So the 737 is a narrow-body plane, not that many seats. United has some slack in its wide-body fleet. Those are the big planes that fly to Asia or Europe. Those are 787s, 777s. And, when United is able, it says, okay, well, we have these planes on the ground. Let's fly them on a 737 MAX route. Scott Kirby, United's president, wrote a letter to employees this week, and he said, we're doing it. We're not inconveniencing many customers. We're happy about it. But this is expensive, and we don't know how long we'll be able to do this. So I think come peak summer, if this lasts, United will not be able to do that in the same way. They'll have to cancel more flights. But so far, so good over at United. Those are the three U.S. airlines with the MAX.
Yeah, and you mentioned the word expensive there. I would imagine we're going to start seeing in quarterly earnings reports just how expensive this is for some of these airlines.
We will. In fact, we're starting to see it a little bit because American Airlines put out some investor guidance earlier this week, and they said this unit revenue guidance, it's going to be a little bit lower than expected for the first quarter. It's not horrible, but American will make less money than expected. Southwest also. With Southwest guidance, it was a little harder to make sense of it, just because you may remember, Steve, before we talked about MAX groundings for Southwest, we were talking about a labor dispute with their mechanics. The mechanics may have slowed down the airline a little bit. Southwest was taking more airplanes out of service for maintenance reasons than before. The good news with Southwest is that it's reached a tentative agreement with its mechanics, so that has sort of gone away. But Southwest in the first quarter really had two issues. They had the MAX grounding, they had the labor dispute, and so it's a little bit hard to tell financially where the bigger impact was.
Brian, another story this week that's interesting, it's JetBlue announcing an international route. To some of listeners who are not as up on this as you are, that was news, but it's sort of the worst kept secret ever, isn't it?
It really is the worst kept secret, Steve. It's certainly the worst kept secret since Southwest announced that they were flying to Hawaii a couple of years ago. Southwest telegraphed that. Most people knew it was coming. People got excited about it. We don't see JetBlue much in Chicago. They're there, but they're not a big player. JetBlue is really big in Boston and New York. And so this week, JetBlue said that it would fly from Boston and New York to London and perhaps elsewhere in Europe by 2021. You know, this is a big deal for passengers on the East Coast. Folks are hoping that it'll do for European routes what Southwest has gone to Hawaii, what that has done. Which is basically lower fares. Southwest is a pretty well-regarded, low-cost carrier, and a lot of passengers are hoping the airline will mix things up a little bit on transatlantic routes.
Yeah, and so if it works on this initial offering, are we going to likely maybe see this in some other markets, including Chicago, at some point?
Steve, I'm afraid I have some bad news on that. The answer is probably not. Boston and New York, they are really important cities to JetBlue, and that's where their focus is. So that's one thing. The second thing is simply aircraft performance. When JetBlue goes to Europe, they're not going to be using these fancy, enormous wide-body airplanes that United and American usually use from Chicago. They're going to be using the single-aisle Airbus A321. It's possible that the A321 has the range to fly from Chicago to Europe. Maybe it could get to Dublin, maybe London, but it really doesn't have the range to get to most of the big cities in Western Europe. It's mainly an East Coast to Western Europe airplane, and for that reason alone, I don't see it flying to Chicago.
Well, one of the coolest stories that I've read of yours recently has to do with sort of taking overhead bins into the digital era. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this is a fun one, Steve. I went to Germany last week, to Hamburg, to the biggest airline interiors trade show in the world. It's a fascinating sight, just rooms and rooms of all the things that might be coming to an aircraft near you, things like seats and, as you mentioned, overhead bins. So there were three companies showing off these next generation overhead bins. One of them was Airbus, and Airbus thinks maybe you want color-coded bins in the future with three lights, red, yellow, green. You can imagine what these mean. So if you see a green bin, that means there's room. A yellow bin, there's not room for a full bag, but maybe for your laptop. And a red bin means no more room. So that's the Airbus idea. Boeing would also put sensors in the bins, but it would report back what's in the bins to gate agents, right? So right now, the gate agents in the airport lobby at O'Hare, they don't really know how much space is left, so sometimes they'll get on the intercom and they'll say, we're out of room, you need to check your bag. But then you get on the airplane and there's actually room. So agents would have access to what's going on in the bins live. That would be interesting. And then a third company called Diehl Aviation, they're German-based. They think it might be a good idea to have pre-reserved bin space. So, you know, maybe you would pay for it, maybe you would get it for free, but you would make a reservation online. The company would have a digital screen on the on the bin above your seat. It would say your name, maybe, and then you would put your bag up there, and nobody else could use it. I have to tell you, Steve, as a regular business traveler, that's my favorite idea. Nothing makes business travelers so anxious as not knowing whether you will get bin space or not, right? Because you're not in Cancun, you're not on vacation. You really don't have those 20 minutes when you get to New York, when you're at LaGuardia, to wait for your bag. You want to go to your hotel, you want to go to your meeting. And, you know, business travelers, we have expense accounts. And so guess what? We might be willing to pay for bin space, but we want it reserved for us. So I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, and the first idea that you came up with sounds like it might maybe speed boarding. If people can find out which overhead bag, overhead compartment is empty with a light, that sounds like a decent idea.
It does sound like a decent idea. We'll see whether it happens or not. You know, this trade show in Hamburg, I've been for the second time. There are a lot of great ideas in there. If I had to guess, about 95% of them we will never see on an airplane, but some cool concepts.
And when you go to these kinds of events, how far from showing you this prototype are they from actually putting it in an actual airplane, would you say?
Well, it's interesting, Steve. You know, a lot of the technology here is not that forward. Airlines could order this option essentially today if they wanted it. People tend to know that airlines are risk averse. They tend to use what has already worked. And so the manufacturers are saying, you know what, if we get an order, we could do it. We're just not sure that we're going to get an order. But sometimes it happens relatively quickly. A few years ago, manufacturers were showing off extra large overhead bins that could where you could put a lot more bags than before. And airlines are starting to add those. So we're seeing them now on American, United, and Alaska.
All right, Brian, good conversation. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com, at Skift on Twitter. Make sure you follow Brian as well at Brian Summers.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up 165 points. Let's check in on agriculture and commodities this morning with Orion Samuelson. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you, Steve. And as we look at the grain trade and the overnight trade at the Chicago Board of Trade, we're looking at slightly higher grain prices as we get ready for the day trade. The July wheat contract currently up a penny and three quarters a bushel, July corn up a quarter of a cent a bushel, and July soybeans up a penny a bushel. That coming after yesterday's trade that saw the corn and soybean futures trade lower. But livestock made news again yesterday as we saw another limit-up move in the lean hog contract. And that came about because of pretty good export sales to China, as apparently that African swine fever situation is continuing to grow. The June lean hog contract at one time traded up the $3 limit, and that came on the word that in the week extending to April 4th, we exported 90,700 tons of pork, 77,700 tons to China. And according to Dennis Smith, who's a broker with Archer Financial Services that we talk to often, he said that was the big story, and it's really a big event. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And, of course, the African swine fever caused a decision this week that really, in my mind, was a bombshell. The National Pork Producers Council Board of Directors announced this week its decision to cancel World Pork Expo 2019 out of an abundance of caution as that African swine fever continues to spread in China and other parts of Asia. And World Pork Expo, Steve, has been going annually since 1987, attracting about 20,000 people to Des Moines for the three-day event. Pork producers and industry people from the U.S., of course, but also from all over the world. And since African swine fever is so contagious and there is no vaccine, the only way you stop it is to kill the hogs that become infected. they decided they would cancel. That's a big event to cancel about 6 weeks ahead of its scheduled date, Steve.
Yeah, I saw that too. But it's better safe than sorry, I suppose.
I think in this situation it is. They say they're getting a little closer to a vaccine, but I don't think we're anywhere near it yet. And the fact is that if you have to vaccinate all the hogs in the world, that's going to take a long time to do it. So we're going to have to live with this. But can you imagine the hotels that were booked, the restaurants that were booked and everything else, and now 6 weeks away, you have to say, not going to do it.
And a big hit for Des Moines as well, right?
It will be.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we're going to talk to one of the officials with the pork producers tomorrow morning on the Saturday morning show, when we'll get the full news on what a difficult decision this one had to be.
All right. Orion, have a great weekend.
You have a great weekend, too, my friend.
Orion Samuelson, the morning show tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Friday, April the 12th. Import-export prices for March will be out, and trade analysts see both metrics rising. The experts are forecasting a 0.2% bump in the price of U.S.-made goods exported to other countries and a 0.4% increase in the price of foreign goods brought here. Numbers will be out mid-morning. Earnings season begins with the big banks, J.P. Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo, first out of the gate. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, April the 12th.